Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and we are back with part two of an episode where we answer questions from the community over on our Facebook group about our own experiences in disaster response and some of the things that got us into this field. We had part one of that episode last week, and we finish up with the second half of the episode this week. We have on the show Dr. Joe Holly, as well as our meteorologist Becky DePodwin, talking about her experience as a meteorologist and her goals to move forward as a disaster manager and responder, as well with her meteorological training. And also, of course, my co-host Sam Bradley on the show. So without further ado, we're going to jump on into our next question that Sam poses to the group, which was brought to us from one of our listeners and audience members over on our Disaster Podcast Facebook group. Here it is.
Well, let's switch gears here. Our friend Chris Chapman from the UK, who was a recent guest, says, you know, given that responding to disasters could be the worst of times, what has made you stop and laugh for the sheer ridiculousness of something that's happened? Now, you may have to think about that one for a bit. Who's got a good answer to that?
I'll jump in on this one. So, yeah, okay. I was riding. I think I was EMS chief at the time, and we got a call for a pedestrian struck on a multi-lane highway road we have nearby, which doesn't usually have pedestrians. We're out in the rural area, so if you had a multi-lane highway, people shouldn't be walking on it. So we didn't know what we were really running into, as you often run into with dispatch situations. You don't get all the information you might need. So we're driving up. I've got a brand new guy who just joined the company and was excited. It was almost his first call, and he's, you know, wide-eyed and ready to go, and we roll up in the dark on the highway, and I swear I see what I think is a head lying in the road not too far ahead of the ambulance, and I'm just like, what the heck is that? I say it out loud. And I said, all right, everybody stop. Let's take our time getting out. We got cars still going by. Fire police haven't gotten here to manage traffic. Let's see if we can find the patient. I get out of the back, and there are, like, intestines behind the ambulance. And I'm just like, what the heck is that? Now, it didn't look like a lot of intestines, but I didn't make the connection yet. I then hear a guy call me from the darkness on the side of the road, a voice, and I go over, and there's a guy there with a pretty obvious tib-fib fracture, and he's cussing up a storm, saying, damn turtle, damn turtle, damn turtle, and he said more than damn, but I'm going to keep it clean for the podcast. So after talking to the guy and getting him stabilized and everything, I realized he had pulled over on the side of the road because a snapping turtle was crossing the highway, and he wanted to help the turtle cross the road. And he wasn't from around the area we're in, so I don't think he realized what a snapping turtle will do to you if you try to mess with it. And, you know, if I see a snapping turtle cross the road and I don't hit it on the first pass, I'll hope the guy behind me gets him, because they're really varmints. But he got out of his car, walked over, picked up this snapping turtle. That was what I saw, was the shell of the snapping turtle in front of the ambulance, and it was the snapping turtle's guts behind the ambulance. But he picked up that snapping turtle and went to carry it off to the side of the road, and, of course, it stuck its neck all the way out and latched onto his arm, and at which point he flung it out of the way and stepped back into the lane and got clipped by a car.
Oh, no.
So luckily he wasn't more severely injured than he was. But he was just, he didn't feel any pain. He was just angry at that turtle. And he was so pissed at himself, pissed at the turtle, pissed at everything. And that's my funny story. I think it's one of my favorite stories to tell, because, you know, this new guy thought he'd come upon, you know, a person that had gotten splatted all over the road, and it was a turtle. And you know, turtle guts look strangely similar enough in the dark to people guts. So that was interesting. Anyway, that's my story.
Well, you were probably worried that it was something really terrible, that this poor guy was going to go running off into the sunset. It reminds me of a story. This isn't necessarily funny, but it was kind of. We had a brand new guy riding along in the ambulance, one of my fire department gigs, and it was a very industrial city, and we had a lot of machinery that people would. Monday seemed to be a bad day for that for some reason. They didn't have all the safety mechanisms in place, and they were always catching fingers and whatever in there. And in this particular case, this guy had managed to deglove both of his arms from the fingers all the way up to his pit. And the weird thing about it was all the structures underneath were perfect. You could see the veins and the arteries and the muscles and everything, and I thought that was kind of fascinating. So anyway, we figured we'll just put some bandages on this guy. And this new guy that came along with us, I turned around to him and I said, "So you want to help with this?" And he turned green and ran out the door. We got back to the station. He left. He quit the company and he never came back. So that just kind of reminded me of, like, there's no soft landing here. Sometimes they're just not quite ready for that. You got a story there, Joe?
Oh, I was sitting here trying to think if anything rises to the level of those two, because those are pretty good. It's been everything from the absurd call out for nothing, you know, to being completely overwhelmed with the report that you got that's nowhere close to what the real scenario was, you know. So I can remember places like the tornado in Moore, Oklahoma, that took the roof off the part of the hospital, particularly the OB, while there's active labor going on, and the multitude of comments related to that entire scenario that were poignant yet somewhat comical in retrospect, as you think about the absurdity of that situation of giving birth while you can see the sky outside and it's raining on you and everything else while you're allegedly at the hospital and the world outside's being destroyed. Here you are, starting new life while all around you is chaos. So, I think it's funny in many ways. It's absurd in many ways. It never ceases to amaze me that we talk about, as we're trying to put together scenarios, these absurd ideas of, let's have an earthquake and a tornado, all at the same time while there's an active shooter going on, and people just sort of laugh at how completely ridiculous and absurd that is. And then, damn it, the next week, that's exactly what happens. And you just sort of put it in the truth is stranger than fiction kind of stuff where there's actively some crazy situation going on and it just continues to get more absurd as you go. And you think that if I told somebody I wanted to do this scenario, they would think I'm just making up a TV show. This is more absurd than anybody can imagine. And every single time, truth is stranger than fiction. There's the folks responding in Hurricane Harvey, that some state search and rescue team that, gets flooded into an area because the waters are rising very quickly. And now they're stuck and they can't get out. And their concern is, how are we going to get, one of our team members, his medications? And You know, where are we going to go? And he needs his meds. And, you know, my first thought is, why don't you have your meds with you? You're a search and rescue team. You're not out there to run out of medicines. And then realizing that there's some circumstances that, you know, complicated all that, and that it's something like insulin, and that, you know, it's pretty legit. That guy probably needs that medicine as quickly as we can get it. And then, you know, by the time that entire scenario is finished, there's five or six guys who are, you know, busy trying to get their anti-cholesterol medications and their erectile dysfunction medications and their GERD medications refilled out in the bush someplace, because, you know, they don't have any of that stuff with them. And just thinking, how incredibly absurd is this? And why are you people out in the field? And who is your support? And what are you, why, what are you doing here? If you can't even take care of yourself, how in the world are you going to take care of victims of this disaster when you're busy tying up resources because your own lack of planning and support? And so, you know, the comedy sometimes is just the absurdity of the situation. And, you know, you can sort of only laugh at it. If you didn't, you'd just cry about it.
Yep. I hear you. And, you know, we medical providers tend to have this, what we call black sense of humor that other people probably wouldn't appreciate, but you got to lighten it up once in a while. I'm thinking about this guy who may have lost his house in a disaster, but he's worried about his ED meds. So, you know, that's, but we won't go there. So Becky, any thoughts?
I don't know that I have any too crazy of stories. I guess I'll go to one just that kind of focuses on animals. This is more happened to me than me reacting to it. There was a tornado outbreak in Kansas. I had been there for about 3 months and I'd just gotten a cat. And so we knew that the day was going to be pretty volatile and there was a good chance for tornadoes in Wichita. And so we asked our bosses if we could bring our cats to work. The answer was, of course, no, can't bring your cats to work. So I did what I thought was the best. And I put my cat in the most interior room, which was my bathroom, with his litter box and food and water for the day. And as luck would unfortunately have it, an EF2 tornado went through my apartment complex, destroyed the second floor apartment of the building next to mine. I lived on the second floor. So my cat went through an EF2 tornado, and I was finally able to get back and kind of get through the debris and get to him. He was perfectly fine, except for the fact that he had pooped on the outside of his litter box because he was so scared as to what was going on. And I felt terrible, but at the same time, I don't know that I laughed. I don't think I could have laughed at that. But it was just one of those things that I was just like, oh my God, this, like, what happened to this animal? Like, he's now been through a tornado, and I haven't really even... I barely even seen one in the distance. So it's not particularly funny, but it's, I think it's a good reminder that cats, pets, animals generally always need to be a part of your emergency plan, whether it's putting them in a safe spot or finding an alternate location for them, something like that, that they're definitely really, really impacted. And to this day, he's terrified of storms. Poor thing.
I think that's beautiful said.
Yeah, I agree. And we're going to actually devote a whole podcast to that topic. I think if I saw a tornado, I'd be pooping outside the litter box too, but that's another story.
Yeah, I can't imagine what the sound was at that point. I can't even get my head around that. I feel so bad.
Yeah, if he hears anything like that sound again, he's probably going to freak.
But oh, yeah, thunder, he's under the bed.
To keep him safe, so that's good. Well, kind of on that note, Brian Journey has a multiple part question. How do you prepare for a deployment or a deployment season in terms of getting your affairs in order, looking at what items you need to pack and your basic to-do list? So Joe, we'll go back to you on this one.
Oh my goodness. Well, so I think, you know, affairs in order kind of stuff is to make certain that the insurance is paid up. And that the wife knows how to find all of the important papers and, you know, what things are due from a payment standpoint or taxes or, you know, any of that kind of stuff, just to try to lessen the last minute phone call of, oh, hey, can you write a check for a big amount of money to so-and-so, because I forgot. So, you know, it's stuff like that, just sort of making certain that financially your loved ones are taken care of and that, you know, those kind of issues are done. You know, for me, I sort of have a couple of sets of bags that stay mostly packed, and I'll tend to go through those after hurricane season is over, just because that's kind of when we're usually the busiest. And, you know, refresh myself with what's in there and, you know, place a few additional items in there if there's stuff I want or need, and make sure things are clean and kind of update my list that I sort of keep on top of that bag so that when I go to pull it out of the closet, I can look at my list and go, oh, yeah, I need to add my toiletries and update my medicine list and don't forget my eyeglasses and, you know, things like that that are always just sort of last minute items. So I think every deployment, you know, makes you appreciate having some other item, device, product or reference that you wish you'd had before. And so I try to keep up with those and then, you know, use a list to keep myself up to date and, you know, have that little quick reference list. So it's things like that, that reduce that anxiety and make being able to get out the door a bit easier, knowing that you have a checklist and that, you know, it's right there in front of you and you don't have to rely on trying to remember that last thing that you definitely said you wanted to take and now you can't remember what it was. So, you know, I think preparation and readiness really help to make deployments easier. And I can spend my time focused on my family and things like that and not on whether or not I remembered to pack a warm pair of socks or not.
Yeah, I totally agree. I, like you, keep my DMAT bag packed. We have certain things that are required in it that regardless of the season. But then, you know, seasonally, like you were saying about hurricane season, if it's we end up in a cold winter environment, I have to switch that out from one season to the next. But basically, the bag is always packed. And then if I know, like you, you think, you know, you have a particular deployment where you thought, well, this thing would be really helpful, I make a little note to myself to put that thing in there if I think I'm going to need it. So I agree, too, as far as I don't have as big an issue not having a family. So if I don't pay my bills, then it's on me. But, you know, there's always a to-do list. What do I do with my animals? Is there somebody that can watch the house? How am I going to get a ride to the airport? Because they don't give you a lot of time, as you well know. Guess what? You're leaving tomorrow morning. Oh, thank you very much. I can't even. So if you didn't have your bag packed, you weren't going to get there. So all of those things are really important. And I would venture to say for everybody else out there, it's not just those of us who are disaster responders. Plan on, you know, keeping your affairs in order. Have, and we're going to talk more about this, but, you know, have a disaster kit. Make sure it's updated. Make sure your food and water aren't out of date. Make sure you have seasonal things in your vehicle. If not, make yourself a to-do list on those things you need to get. So when it hits the fan, you're not going to be as concerned about it because you know you've done the best you can to prepare. Thoughts on that, Jamie?
Well, yeah, I think that that's it's something everybody, we talk about general preparedness. I make the comment, responders have to leave their families at home when these things happen in their communities. And they go to work worrying how their families are going to survive an event in some situations. And having your family's disaster planning kit and your survival gear and everything else that you need for your home and loved ones is, I think, as important or maybe even more important for your personal psychological well-being heading out into a response, because you need to know they're going to be all right. And I think about my own personal, you know, how I prepare for disaster season and, you know, specifically hurricane season, it seems lately. You know, as the journalist side of the disaster podcast, you know, I clear the decks when there's a response. When you and Joe are heading out, you know, I tell my wife and my kids and, you know, that I'm going to need to be available. I'm going to need to carry my laptop with me and a headset microphone or something, because, you know, if I hear from you or hear from Joe and you guys can get on the phone, I want to be able to give those updates and turn them around and get into the community as fast as possible. Because I think that's an important part of what we do here to give a sense and flavor to all the different responses that you guys have been on while we've been doing the show. And I think that there's, I'd like to think there's value to that. What I do, what Becky does, what, you know, what Kyle, you know, what we all lend to it as the support staff here, to give you guys an opportunity to share your unique experiences with our audience.
And that means a lot to us, and I'm sure I'm speaking for Joe too, to know that the community is interested in what we're doing and concerned about what we're doing, and having that link to them is an important thing for us. You would agree with that, wouldn't you, Joe?
I would agree with that. You know, I mean, I think the communication piece is absolutely vital, and you know, certainly the ability to reach back and share information and updates, you know, et cetera, are vitally important. It's part of what we all do. I mean, I think we're all educators at heart, and sharing information is what we do. And, you know, we do that with the idea that it's better for everybody to have that information and that knowledge and to go into those events, whether you're responding, you know, on a sort of a large scale, or you're simply taking care of yourself and your family and your neighbors, and having that knowledge. So to me, that's what it's all about. It's about finding ways to spread the knowledge and the information so that everybody has everything, not everything, I guess, but as much as they can have to make themselves and their impact on that situation as positive as it can be.
Exactly. And I know before we got Becky on board, it was basically like during the 2017 hurricanes, which you and I were deployed on all of them, you know, knowing that Jamie and Kyle were holding down the fort, you know, really meant a lot to us. A couple quick questions as we wind down here. KK Panja, who is another former guest, wants to know what our personal aftercare regimen is after a deployment or a big incident. And Joe, I'll throw that to you again.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I think for me, it's I guess there's a lot of different layers to that. You know, I think there's always the personal parts of that, to spend some time reconnecting with family, and just sort of having a little downtime and some togetherness time with those that you love. And the I think on a more kind of professional responder level, it's paying attention to my physical and mental state after an event like that. You know, I think what we have to do, and certainly what we do from a medical perspective, is we're doing health monitoring of ourselves and our team after a response like that. And we're hoping that our team members will reach out to us with some, you know, weird rash or medical condition or, you know, physical, mental, or psychological state that they're struggling with. And I think it's part of the challenge is to make certain that we're doing the same thing for ourselves, and not ignoring what we know are signs that we are struggling, hurting, you know, not being in a place where we need to be, and then objectively doing the right thing for yourself. So if you're struggling with, you know, critical incident issues and those are affecting you, then you need to be seeking some help, some sort of way to make certain that you're taking care of yourself. So, you know, I think you have really broad perspective, things like that, as well as just the local stuff of, you know, getting a nice drink of some really good whiskey, because I really like really good whiskey. And, you know, I want some of that when I get home, and I want to hug the wife and kids and the dogs and kick the cat like you do. And, you know, just be home for a while and appreciate the incredibly wonderful life that I have. And give myself some downtime to recover and be ready for the next thing that may come up in the day or a month or a year.
Well, you're lucky because Kimberly gets it, and she doesn't sit there and just stress about it. You know, she gets on social media, and she puts up all these wonderful things about you, which would probably embarrass you if you had time to read it. But, you know, she's proud of you, and she shows that. And she knows when you get home that you need some downtime. And not everybody understands that, you know, as far as your family's concerned. So that's another area I think we're going to address. Jamie?
Well, I think for me, you know, it's really attending to my own well-being. And there's different ways to do that. While not a specifically a disaster responder, there have been events here in my local community that have had an impact on me long term that I've had to address from time to time. And I think that that's something that we all need to acknowledge in ourselves, that we have those moments in our careers as responders at every level that are going to stick with us for good reasons and for bad reasons. And to acknowledge that part of the job is just as much a part of it as doing our regular training and keeping our gear in good shape and things like that. We've got to keep ourselves in good shape and do the things that need to be done when we recognize something needs to happen. So that's been something that I've tried to focus on a lot for myself. And also, you know, I've always been a big proponent of that after action debriefing. And even when it wasn't a particularly traumatic call, I always try to look at every situation that I am in and say, what could I have done better? What could I have done different? Did I miss something? And that goes for every aspect of it. So when I'm in a command situation, am I managing those people around me appropriately so that they can get a learning situation out of it, that that they can grow from the event as well? So that's all part of it. For me, is a big issue. I'm curious about what Becky's thoughts are, because I'm curious, you know, when a major event, major hurricane or tornado or whatever it may be, comes through, hits the country. What do the people in the meteorological community do after an event comes along? Is there something you all start kind of look at, how your models worked or things like that?
Oh, yes. We call it a post-mortem. So it's the same thing as an after action report, pretty much. That's just kind of what we've called it. But we do take a look back and see everything that we did right, everything that we did wrong. What signs did we miss? Why did we miss them? How can we do better next time? What can we take away from this forecasting situation and apply it for the future? So after every major event, whether it's a hurricane, a winter storm, a severe weather outbreak, we have these meetings as a department. At least at AccuA, this is what happens. We have a whole department-wide meeting, and we sit there and discuss. And these can go sometimes a couple hours, depending on, you know, who's in the room and how badly we missed the forecast. This doesn't happen too often, but we definitely like to look back and see what could be done differently the next time. I mean, you always have to be working on improving and getting better. So, yeah.
Well, Becky, I kind of think, you know, I'm sort of visualizing meteorologists sort of like dispatchers, where they're engaged in the initial stages of an event. They know what's going on out there, and they can also be just as stressed about what's going on out there, especially people like you that are people-centric. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, it's tough. I'll give one example, and it's Hurricane Florence of this year. We saw Florence coming from about 10 days away, and we didn't know exactly where the storm was going to make landfall. But we were pretty confident that it was going to make landfall somewhere in the U.S. So that was about a week and a half of building up with models changing, the landfall point changing, you know, people getting nervous and scared. And that was honestly one of the most stressful situations I've been in when it comes to forecasting a storm, because you have this pit in your stomach with events like this. And when it's that far out, that pit just kind of keeps getting lower and lower and lower. And then the event happens and it's as bad as you predicted, if not worse. And it's really hard to come to terms with, knowing that, like, you knew exactly what was going to happen. Not exactly what was going to happen. We had a really good idea. We got the message out, and somehow people still died or were hurt. And that's really tough as a meteorologist to cope with. And then you always also, of course, wonder what you could have done better, which is the reason for the postmortem. But it definitely takes a real mental toll. And I know meteorologists who work in the National Hurricane Center, and I don't know how they do it. I mean, they went through storms like Irma and Michael, where they had pretty direct hits, or people that were in the EOC in Panama City during Michael. And it's like you forecast for the storm, and then it comes and hits your backyard and all the people you know and work with and care about. Like, that's an insane mental impact and toll. And they have to work really, really hard to keep their mental health okay, to be okay with everything that's going on. And I know the National Weather Service has a really good support system in place when it comes to mental health and the stress of the job and things like that. But it's not something that's often talked about necessarily. I think it's more recognized in first responders because you guys see it firsthand, but not as much recognized in the people that are sitting here forecasting this awful disaster scenario and then seeing their predictions come true. But it's tough. It's really tough.
That was exactly my point. So just like dispatchers, you know, they're sort of not in the picture in the field, and so they get forgotten about. So I'm glad you recognize that needs to be addressed with meteorologists as well. Okay, last quick question. Where do you see yourself in 5 years, Joe?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's exactly what I was thinking. I absolutely love what I do, and I really can't see myself doing anything else. And, you know, I've had a few folks kind of hint around, when are you going to retire? And my response is usually, I'm never going to retire. If I retired, I'd just show up and do it for fun, because I absolutely love it. So, you know, I might as well not retire and get paid for it. So, I see myself doing exactly what I'm doing now, hopefully on, you know, even better, and hopefully with a greater impact on students and places that we respond to, and you know, the folks that I work with, that I am doing a better job than I am now, and I'm making a bigger difference than I make now.
I hear that. Jackie, what about you? I know you've got some plans for the future.
I want to not be in an office. I want to be boots on the ground somewhere, really working with people one-on-one, whether that's the public, fellow emergency responders, both, all of the above. I want to be involved in the action and really being able to look someone in the eye and say, I'm going to help keep you safe no matter what. I think that would be amazing.
And I know that you'll get there. For me, it's sitting down and writing as many books as Jamie Davis, but I don't think that's ever going to happen because he's so far ahead of me. What about you, Jamie?
Well, I mean, I enjoy being an author and writing my stories in fiction and things. But one of the things that I'm passionate about, even in my writing, is bringing an authenticity to the medicine that I might portray in a book, and to the responders that I portray in the books that I write. And so I'll still be doing that. But I also am passionate about doing projects like the Disaster Podcast, working with people like you all. And there's a couple other podcasts I do that I feel very strongly about the mission that they accomplish. And so I think that I'll still be doing something this or something very close to it, because I believe that it's important to share these stories from events and from people's experiences to give them an opportunity to take something from it and learn from it. Similar to what Joe does, you know, what we talked about earlier with Paragon, and trying to share the experience of people who've been through something in an effort to I would even call it inoculate them so that they're somewhat better prepared for the chaos of a major event, because we've already talked about how every event's different and you can't prepare for a specific event, but you can prepare for the chaos that different events might present to you. So, Joe, you know, I know we talked a bit about Paragon earlier, but what can people do when they reach out to you? We haven't asked this question of you before. What information do you want to hear from someone when they give you that call and say, all right, tell me what you can do?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of what we want to know is how can we help them? What areas do they feel like they need help with? And you know, in many cases, it's related to we've been through this, you know, event, and we didn't feel like we responded to that event as well as we should have. And how can we take our experience there and learn from it and, you know, build on that so that when we get the next hurricane, the next active shooter, the next earthquake, whatever it is, we're able to do a better job than we were before. So it's very much like, you know, Becky's after action report, right? How do we learn from what we did the last time, and how can we make it better? So for us, it's tell us how we can help you. Tell us the things that you are worried about. Tell us what it is you're trying to plan for, and let us just talk through that with you, with the hope being that we think of things that you haven't thought of, and we have ways to address the areas that you have concerns about, and hopefully many other areas that you hadn't even thought about yet.
So when someone wants to reach out to you, where can they contact you guys at Paragon?
Well, certainly can catch us on the web at paragonmedicalgroup.com and through the Disaster Podcast as well. We have a Facebook page for Paragon Medical Group, as well as a Facebook page for the Disaster Podcast. So absolutely any of those social media outlets are appropriate. And if you go to our website, there's phone numbers, et cetera, and, you know, contact us spot where you can reach out to us directly.
Great. Becky, where can folks find out what you're up to? I know you're pretty active on Twitter and a lot of other things you have going on. So where can we reach you?
Yeah, mostly Twitter. I like to talk a lot about emergency preparedness, mental health, weather, obviously, cats. But that's at WX underscore Bex, or you can search Becky D. Podwin. I am the only one out there. And I'm on LinkedIn and in the Disaster Podcast Facebook group.
Excellent. Sam, how about you?
Well, I'm probably be on Twitter with Miss Becky and everybody else under Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11. On Facebook, of course, in the community group, our Disaster Podcast group, and on the disasterpodcast.com website. How about you, Jamie?
Well, people can find me in most social media places under PodMedic, and I'd love to hear from you, so please connect with me. Of course, we've talked a little bit, you know, a lot. Each of us have talked about connecting on the Disaster Podcast Facebook group, and I'm excited because we've had a little more interactivity come up, especially with regard to this episode and some recent things that have been posted there. So please continue to participate. If you're not already part of the group, please join the group. And we'd love to have you come in and participate with the rest of our followers and audience members and guests and everyone else that's active on there to address each other's questions and challenge each other to come up with good answers for things that maybe someone's run into that needs something solved. So that's what it's there for. So please utilize it for that. This is a good episode, Sam. I'm glad you really, reached out to the community and asked them these questions, to come up with these questions, because I've learned things about all of you. And heck, for some of you, you and Joe, we've been doing this for years. Becky's been a part of this podcast yes. for over a year now. And so I'm learning stuff from all of you.
Yes, we've learned of our similarities and our differences and our ways of thinking. It's just too bad we didn't have Kyle on tonight, but we'll catch up with him later. So do keep those questions coming, folks, because we enjoy answering them and we all learn by them. But as usual, this is a reflection of the fact that disaster medicine is not our everyday medicine.